You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Alex Hamilton. Alex, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Alex, tell me about what's happening in your studio now. There's so many questions I want to ask. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on or preparing for?
Yeah. Well, at the moment, I've been doing these facsimiles of my sketchbooks for a few years now, and so I'm sort of working on 3 and 4, I sort of organize them a little bit, but they're these books that I sort of put out, and you know, sometimes I give them to people, and they're about 150 edition for each one, and they're a sort of thing that I sometimes they're sort of done in parallel with my work, and I use them sometimes to sort of sometimes directly and sometimes indirectly, and they're a sort of interesting space to work with bookwork space.
I like that very much, especially as a way just to communicate with people about what you're doing, because a sketchbook is such a kind of an intimate aspect of an artist's work, I think.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you actually make and distribute those books and a little bit of the reaction to them, but how you make them and distribute them?
Well, I'm always carrying around the same sized sketchbooks, and I've been doing that for a number of years. So you know, if I'm at a bus stop or something like that, I sort of mostly draw and write in quotes from books I'm reading. And sometimes I also make up quotes that should have been there in the first place, but you know, from something that sounds like a quote but isn't. And then sometimes it's more direct observations I sort of write. But mostly they're to do with drawing, and I always use handwriting and one sort of pen. And so there's a sort of a textual thing that's always going on in all the pages. So you sort of turn the page and you start seeing these kinds of shapes in, well, handwriting and drawing as well, because I do an awful lot of drawing, and I respond to things like exactly where I am. But they're, you know, urban and metropolitan and country areas,
and then when you were saying you make facsimiles of these books, how do you actually reproduce them and make additions? I'm interested also in the process by which you reproduce those and then you distribute them. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, I was very big on printmaking, you know, about 15 years ago or so. Even 20 years ago, and these are offset, so I just directly scan them and compile them, and then I get a printer to put them together with offset and bind them as well. So they're the sort of most direct way of doing facsimile I can. I mean, I also do bookworks, and these are the, yeah.
Well, I love bookworks. I love bookworks. So that's why I'm also asking you more detailed questions. So you reproduce these with offset in editions of 150, and then how do you bind them? What's the binding process you use?
Oh, the binding process is totally mechanical. It's one of those services that people get when they do their PhDs or something, and they get a binder to make two books for them. Only I happen to make 150. It's a sort of a very, very well-made paperback type. I just want to make it as easy and to absorb and direct as I can. I mean, with other bookworks, I sort of do other things, but these are quite, they even sort of produce the tone of the paper, which is always slightly off-white, of course. They sort of produce that as a sort of a kind of a grey screen on this white paper. So, yeah, so you get this.
And,
you,
and then you're not talking about a fine art printer. You're talking about the kind of printer that would print, like you're saying, a PhD thesis and bind it, or am I mistaken?
Oh, yes, yeah. It starts off as my sketchbooks are sort of acid-free paper, of course, like all sketchbooks, but these are... they're neutral pH as much as that sort of paper is, which is fairly close to neutral pH. They sort of last. They're meant to last, and they have that sort of binding that doesn't sort of split after 10 years.
And tell me, who you send these to? Like, you're mailing them out to friends and colleagues, and how do they receive them? And maybe you can tell me a little bit about how that relates to your work, but I'd love to know how you send them out and how that process works and, in a sense, begin to feed your work.
Yeah, well, whenever I go to things like openings or I see friends or I meet somebody, and I have some sort of conversation with them, something like that, it's a totally informal basis. You know, besides, I leave them at my gallery in London. He's always got a pile of them there. Mostly I just do it totally informally. Sometimes I post it to people whose work I really appreciate.
So it's a way of sharing a vision or your work that may open a conversation about kind of what you're involved in happens?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It opens a lot of conversations, and it's kind of a better way of conducting a conversation where you don't have to just use words as well, and it's a wonderful sort of medium to do that kind of thing with.
So tell me, maybe you said your gallery in London always has a bunch of them. How does the gallery use them? Is it selling them, or is it talking about your work through them? Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, he does an awful lot of art fairs, Patrick, so whenever somebody buys my work, they get one of those books as well. And then when I have openings there, I just let people take them, which is quite funny to sort of watch, because a lot of people don't think that a commercial gallery can just sort of give things away. And then they come away with these sort of marvelous books, and they're quite happy because, a lot of people can't... a lot of people don't go to openings just to buy work. I mean, they want to look at work as well.
So you give away a certain number of these books?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just a way of... I don't want to sort of attribute much intention to it, really. Yeah. I mean,
sure.
I also sort of sell my work for, whatever price is being asked at the time, I'm part of the art market.
And so, how are your books talked about in terms of your, or how do they relate to your work? Which opens our conversation up a little more to talking about your work. But the people are at the gallery; they're looking at the books, and how do you think that relates to your work? Well,
for example, the books have usually had the titles of the show. So, under a white sky, and I would see flowers through your eyes. That was another one. And the next one is going to be three, and it's going to have the the word three in front of it, and then the next one after that is going to be sort of written backwards. Then I remembered, because I like to sort of over, because that's another way of over-determining something. You know, if you sort of, it's like saying it twice, you sort of look back and it's also backwards. And it's a kind of a, it's sort of almost a joke, I guess, especially when you see it in a book and I'm not explaining the joke. And so it's a sort of a overcomplicating title. And so you start looking at the idea, I think, of simplicity, and if something's kind of complicated, it's usually a bit of an accident if it's sort of too complicated. And that kind of relates to my work, because I, use these like significant forms, and then when you sort of alter the ground figure relationship of the significant form, you notice other forms. And it, in this sort of process of working through it, then you can get a number of visual patterns always, happening at the same time, really. So, in the picture field, I won't say composition, but kind of patterns, or, these invisible paths between forms and non-significant forms, significant forms that are made less significant by other forms. And yeah, so these titles have always related to what I'm exactly doing, at the time. And so there was one called In Space We Trust, and that was a while ago, that one, but that kind of related to, In Space We Trust. So the space was also about this blank that the word filled at the same time. And at that time I was doing these drawings of the front pages of newspapers, and I was tracing the picture and the word form and just leaving a blank and then filling it in.
That also sounds a little bit to me like, it has the ring of, In God We Trust, which, in America is on our dollar bill. So I guess I have to ask you, because when I was talking about introducing you, I almost said Alexander Hamilton. So yeah. Alex Hamilton, is close to Alexander Hamilton. Were you referencing that there, and will you be referencing that in the future? Because I think you are, or said something about that earlier.
Yeah, it was actually just before the GFC, the financial crash in 2009, I think, or 2008. Anyway, I was doing that, so it was sort of. I had that in mind, and at the same time I was beginning this project, which I'm now working on, using the amendments to the American Constitution, and I've been taking out words and letters of, I've done the Fourth Amendment so far, and I'm working on the Second Amendment, and I take out words and letters, and I turn these into poetry, and then I use different mediums for this, for the physical form of this poetry. Like for the Fourth Amendment, I did this kind of pop song for it, and I also did these drawings, which looked like either a flag or. Including the sentences, which sort of did for the stripes of the flag, and it also looked like kind of hair. So it's quite these wave drawings are quite ambiguous as to exactly what they are, because they're very stylized types of waves. And
but at the same time, the content sounds very rich. You're talking about, we talked about Alex Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton. The Second Amendment is one of the most controversial things going on in this country, in America.
Of course, and I'm, you know, not really, I mean, I'm an observer, and I sort of enjoy being an observer, and I see these kind of possibilities. With the Fourth Amendment, for example, it was something that, it's changed its use over the years, of course. You know, it started off to protect smugglers against the British, or it started off at to stop inspectors coming into people's houses and seizing goods, and then in the 70s there was, you know, it was about women's bodies more, and then so I gave it a more liminal meaning, which is, it's sort of almost no meaning at all, but I sort of keep the same tone of voice in the writing, this sort of declamatory tone of voice, which I find quite beautiful. And you can sort of read these things as any poetry, any amendment. You can read these things quite differently each time you read it. You come out a different way. You see what I mean? So there's lots of different, there's a kind of whole media set that I use for these amendment works.
What do you mean by a media set? What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, so there's drawing, and it's a sound work, and it's also a video where I play this ice trumpet to it that I made out of ice with a wooden mouthpiece, and I sort of do this solo to the rapt words of the poem. But it makes a lot more sense when you actually sort of see the video. It's a proper sort of song, with, you know, because basically these things are all about form. So this has sound form, and tone.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that is a set of different media, literally a variety of media that often comes together.
So when I'm, for example, I had 2 weeks where I had this show in Manhattan, so I was there for 2 weeks, and I was walking along, and I came to Pier 15, and there were these wonderful sailing boats, which was, what was it called? That's right, Hornblower Cruises and Events, and so I was sort of photographing that, and I could see the Caspar David Friedrichs, because it was snowing a lot, and there were sort of deep snow drifts around. I could see this painting, Caspar David Friedrichs, Das Eismeer, with these sailing boats just at that right time. But then as I took the photo, I knew that the photo would not show that kind of fantasy picture, that particular composition that rang true just at that moment. But so I sort of take these things home, these photos, and then I work on them for some time, and I sort of produce usually up to about 15 different versions of altered large AO size photo from this, just this one photo. So I sort of photocopied the photo to AO size, which is quite big, as you know, it's sort of like 84 centimeters high, or and then rub out bits and draw them in again. And that kind of relates. I sort of inadvertently thought, well, this is like Lawrence, so this is like Ice Trumpet. So these things kind of inadvertently relate sometimes, and sometimes they have more sort of direct, more interesting relations to other parts of my work. But so what I do is sort of quite inadvertent sometimes, and quite considered at other times.
Alex, can you tell me a little bit more about the process of working?
Yeah, well, when I go to the studio, I always sort of have to be ready to actually do something, because, you know, although it's all about this looking and seeing patterns in these giant photocopies on watercolor paper, I always actually have to do it pretty much immediately, drawing what I've seen. So these photocopies have these kind of imperfections in them a lot of the time, and they're kind of also quite anachronistic now these days, photocopying, because it's something that conceptual artists used to do just to sort of distribute a lot, and but nowadays it's kind of gradually being superseded, and that kind of makes it quite interesting to work with this kind of this encrusted emulsion, which you have to take a lot of effort to rub out, and it's also, I guess, a bit like, because they're all different, you know, there's all these mistakes in the photocopying. You know, the machine sort of does a line across sometimes, or it's kind of like looking at, or you know, a blank sheet of paper, and it's also sort of not quite like because you have to read into things or not read into them, or you have to sort of ignore some things just for the sake of coherence sometimes. And so quite often this way of working is very instantaneous, and at the same time you can, you know, you sort of think, well, that pattern is going to do this, so it's. I also sort of think a few steps ahead sometimes, and so I can sort of control the patterns sometimes that I put down. You know, I have a the main thing is to keep this work, to keep these drawings open, so that you can, you know, your eye goes around in a different way each time you look at it. And for me, that's really interesting, and it relates to these different ways of reading concrete poetry as well. When you first look at it, when you first look at my work, I think you see this similarity with architects' projects, you know, those architects' illustrations of future projects, and it sort of has that visualizing facility of those illustrations that architects do. And then you sort of get to this point after a while where you sort of start noticing texture and surface, and this quite important part, which is the support, like the paper, or and what's going on with the support, because there's actually quite a lot of kind of damage I do to this support. And I see that as that's part of the subject as well. Yeah, subject and support are more or less the same thing.
And to look at, I think, lastly, a little bit about, you said earlier, and in the course of the case, that you are in the market and you're in art fairs regularly. To talk about the market for a little bit, how do you feel, because it is defined for you, and you said that so clearly, how do you feel you entered into the so-called market and maintain that doing what you're doing?
Yeah. It's a good question. It's something that I don't really... I feel that I'm a part of it because all my work disappears when I after I do it, and so I don't see it again, and it goes somewhere, and that's kind of a problem. You know, nobody buys poetry, and nobody's much interested in bookworks and concrete poetry. These things are kind of, you know, they find their way all through my work. I mean, there's just the side of my work that, which is the sort of main bit, really. These large painting drawings that I do, which, just get sold.
But so how does that happen? That sounds like it happens without, you know, you making any effort. But at some point you entered into this market. Your works became available, and now obviously it sounds like there's a waiting list. So how did that begin, so that it began disappearing, as you're saying?
Well, it was sort of it was a way of showing. I mean, I like doing shows, and I've always been in these shows where, you know, I find the space or it's a artist-run space or something like that. Or my first gallery in London was with this group of people, and we had this squat, actually. It was a sort of a squat in London. And it was a really great place to show, because all these people came along and did very strange shows. And, and I just sort of try and keep that kind of thing going with the commercial gallery as well, because I really don't see that there's... you know, a lot of people kind of go into the commercial world and out again without really bothering to notice the difference in the art world. There's no sort of, I don't think there's that that kind of purity of that we had like 20 years ago of somehow feeling yourself defined by the market. There's an awful lot of artwork that I could think of, but I just sort of never do. I don't bother to do it because I don't want to do artwork in the first place.
So, I mean, you're saying the way this began was it was creating spaces, like so many artists do. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how you began to get visibility, by, you know, working with artist-run spaces or non-profit spaces and creating spaces. And the commercial gallery world is obviously the one that's making all these paintings disappear, because at least in the United States, the nonprofits don't do that. How did that relationship begin, and was that something you wanted?
Yeah. Oh, well, it certainly was at the beginning, because it was a new and exciting thing to be part of a commercial gallery for me. I did this performance at the Swiss Embassy playing an ice trumpet, and I was sort of reading these statistics of water flow put onto a music stave, and I was sort of sight-reading them with an ice trumpet. And, you know, I thought that was really good, and at the same time I had this kind of parallel practice, I guess, of drawing, which I say parallel because it really does take a... You sort of notice your head sort of reconfiguring itself when you respond visually to something, and when you respond in the sort of 360 dimension to sound instead of the, you know, 180 degrees of vision. And but I could still see it just as I sort of see this concrete poetry thing as really one kind of practice dealing with form, you know. Even they're kind of, I mean, I have these sort of several drawing projects, but they're all sort of wired together as really, in one way or another, they're related to each other.
And that it's clear. And there's some ironies here, you know. Once the work is poetic about poetry, but people aren't buying poetry in a sense, they're buying these surfaces. But how did that begin to happen? Was it one gallery that began selling your work and able to make that happen?
Oh, well, I came to London in, you know, 1995, and then after a few years, I met this gallerist, and he just came around, and he was starting, more or less starting up then, and he came around to my studio, and I was already showing with this other artist-run space that had these really interesting shows going on, and so I sort of had a kind of interest to Patrick already, because I got this wonderful review in Independent, which was, you know, and they don't sort of happen. I just sort of got lucky and got a review, and that really helped as well. And I'm not saying the work didn't deserve a review, but lots of work deserves reviews, and you know.
Right.
Yeah. If you see what I mean, there's lots of very good work around. I just liked this. The gallerist and I sort of got on very well, and so we just did show after show together, really. And after that, I kept showing in other places as well, but I think people. Yeah, just sort of dip in and out of the commercial world these days. I don't see the problem with it.
I don't see a problem with it either. I think you've built also a relationship that obviously works. Patrick sounds like a wonderful guy.
So far, you know, some people, you know, we trust each other, and there's a lot of horror stories with especially galleries in London where people don't trust each other, and nobody gets paid, and because of him, I've been able to just keep doing what I'm doing, and also do all these sort of side projects like sort of books and sound works, which very much, you know, part of my work. I mean, I I know other people who just sort of do large paintings for 30 years or something. And
right.
I really can't.
Alex, in closing, is there any show you want to send the viewers to? This interview is coming out in 2015 in the winter. Is there any show upcoming that you want to mention for people who may be in London or wherever the show will be, or the United States?
Yeah. Well, I'm just preparing for this residency next year at the NAS Foundation in New York. Shows might come up, or they might not, and these things sort of take a lot of planning. If you live in a big city, it's a sort of a, some people do things in sort of like 3 weeks, make something happen, but these days I make things happen by email and by remote control, so the lead-in time is a lot longer now, and that gives me this quite big time to just...
To work, because you're staying, email and making, I imagine you're, by email you mean making proposals for exhibitions or something like that, is that correct?
Yeah, proposals and institutions take a long time, especially in Australia. And at the moment, I'm sort of doing these, art fairs and my work.
And those art fairs you're doing on yourself, or you mean Patrick is doing those art fairs?
Patrick does them for me, and yeah.
Well, very good. Well, people will see more of your work online as well. After this interview.
Yeah. Well, I hope so. It's a very interesting radio program you do.
Alex, thank you so much for being part of the program today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure trying to use words.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.